And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Last season in the Premier League, it felt like there was a manager being sacked every week.
Breaking news in the last few minutes that Leicester City have parted ways with Brendan Rodgers, although after digesting the statement from the Leicester chairman, it is pretty clear that he has been sacked.
No, I don't think we have to worry now about Stevie and how he said himself yesterday after the game. He knows the game long enough. These kind of things can happen.
Scott Parker has not been sacked because they got beat 9-0 by Liverpool. Scott Parker has been sacked because he's opened his mouth.
They don't want to play under pressure. They don't want to play under stress. Yeah, it's easy in this way. And Tottenham's story is this.
Breaking news of a second managerial departure in one day from the Premier League. And this time it is the Chelsea boss, Graham Potter.
Crystal Palace have basically acted out of fear of relegation.
My opinion is I'm not happy. I think Patrick Vieira should have stayed there. As you just said, the run of games they've had, it's been really hard. But the next run of games they had, I think he could have turned it around.
This season, it feels like the writing's on the wall for a few struggling clubs already.
And it gets worse for Sheffield United in the rain. It's now 10 without a win for the Blades, rooted to the bottom of the table.
So is it a surprise that no head coaches have paid the price? And will November once again prove to be the start of sacking season? I'm Ayo Akinwolere. Welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. With us for this one, we have The Athletic's Dom Fifield, Duncan Alexander, and also Jay Harris as well. Right. I'm so fascinated to hear from all of you actually on this. I'm sure we've got varied theories on it, but you haven't seen any sackings yet this season. This is interesting. Well, compared to last season in particular, any thoughts on why? Start with you, Jay.
I think, firstly, there was such an early sacking last season because Scott Parker kind of went down in flames after that, you know, 9-0 defeat against Liverpool.
We were just under-equipped, really, of being able to deal with that at them moments in time.
Yeah, for sure, we need more players. Yeah, for sure, we need...
This season, some of the clubs at the bottom of the division, so Sheffield United are in a very tricky situation because, you know, they sold the vast majority of their best players in the summer. Ilmaan Ndiaye, Sander Berg. So Heckenbottom's kind of working with his hands tied behind his back a little bit. Burnley have obviously gone on this great cultural revolution under Vincent Kompany, and at the moment he's maybe foolishly trying to stick too hard to that. And then very similar with Bournemouth with Iraola, where they're trying something new, something fresh. I'm sure Dom will remind us of what happened at Crystal Palace maybe over a decade ago, where they brought in De Boer and tried to go on this fancy cultural reset.
How old are you? It was in 2017, wasn't it?
It feels longer ago. But obviously, you know, Crystal Palace went on a great cultural reset and kind of abandoned it after four games. So maybe Bournemouth are thinking, we need to ride this out a little bit longer. But that's my kind of take on the situation.
You've gone bottom end of the table. Duncan, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think obviously last season we had the World Cup slap bang in the middle, which I think really, A, concentrated all the games into a very short period, but I think concentrated clubs' minds as well. That gave them a really, you know, big part of the season to sort of reset if they wanted to. And we did see that with people like, you know, Emery coming in and Lopetegui. But also I think this season feels a lot more set. Like if you look at metrics like expected goals in terms of open play, XG, the three teams that came up have got the lowest three, which isn't always the case. And, you know, we haven't seen all three promoted teams go down, straight back down since 1998. So it doesn't happen very often. In fact, it's only happened once in the Premier League era. So I think that gives maybe owners and people that run clubs in the lower half of the Premier League this season a little bit more confidence that their team can turn it around. So I think that's kind of what we're seeing.
I think that bit's the key in terms of those mid-table clubs, because I think when a club who basically needs to be in the Premier League for the revenue streams, or maybe has been in there for a while and has grown used to those revenue streams, is looking over their shoulder and thinking, "My, we could get hauled into a relegation battle here." That's when the panic button is hit and the change tends to happen. Well, that's a theory anyway. And when you look at this season, I think a lot of clubs in that sort of danger zone usually are thinking, well, with what we've got, we're not going to get dragged into a relegation battle this season because Sheffield United, Burnley and Luton are pretty close to being nailed on, as close as you could possibly get to being nailed on to being in the bottom three, with Bournemouth now sort of adding to their number as another possibility. Look, it may be really harsh and it may be that one of those clubs, I know Duncan is convinced Luton Town are going to get out of it, for example. I mean, it may well be that one of those clubs goes on to a run and holds himself clear of trouble, and then people do start to panic. But I think at the moment, when clubs are looking at this season as almost like a bit of a free hit, because I think, well, it's not much point in us changing our manager now and spending all this money on compensation, on hiring a new team. We could just get by now, potentially, and then readdress things next summer.
I'm so fascinated by this, particularly last season, because it was such an anomaly, right? Like, the World Cup season. Is it fair to judge any manager that was in a position last season as to how good they did? Because it was such a weird time to be a manager in the Premier League.
Well, it was. I mean, again, I'll go back to, let's take the Palace example. The last game before the World Cup break, if Palace had won at Nottingham Forest and they were, I think it was 0-0 and Zaha missed a penalty, they would have gone into the World Cup seventh in the table. As it is, they lost 1-0 and embarked on, I think, one win in 17 matches. And the next thing you know, Patrick Vieira's lost his job, with Palace really looking over their shoulder and also at a more favourable run of fixtures to come, hence why they went back with what they knew with Roy Hodgson. It was like two seasons in one last year, and that was the thing. It was that with that break in the middle, as Duncan says, that there was an opportunity, like a mini pre-season.
Yeah, and you look at teams like Villa and Wolves who did make change before and they were fine. And then you look at a team like Leeds that maybe left it longer and then it was kind of too late. And I think when to sack managers is the key thing. You know, like we all remember the early ones, like I used to joke about Scott Parker last season, but generally the most common time is sort of late October, early November. And that's, I mean, we've got a piece on The Athletic coming on Thursday by Mark Carey looking at league table variance. You know, the old sort of phrase, you know, I don't look at the league table till 10 games in. It actually turns out to be quite a wise saying, because basically by 10 games in, which is where we are now, 80% roughly of the positions teams are in is set. So it takes quite a big shift to sort of move from where you are now to the end of the season. So this, I do think the next few weeks in the Premier League will be the time when, if changes are going to be made, then they're going to happen.
It's interesting that, because I remember around this time last year, the rumours and whispers around Brendan Rodgers losing his job at Leicester City were massive. And, you know, there were reports going that Thomas Frank was being lined up to take over from that role. And in the end, obviously, Frank stays at Brentford and Rodgers doesn't go until March or April. So what, you've got 6, 7, 8 months of just constant noise around Rodgers' position. And then he didn't go. It's too late for Dean Smith to do anything and Leicester slide through the trapdoor. And how many times did we hear this time last season? And even as we got into January, February, that squad's too good to go down.
I mean, which is sort of true, because like you look at it. And I actually think how Leicester are doing this season in the Championship, again, will calm Premier League owners, because it's like, you know, you can go down. And if you do it in the right way and, you know, keep some of the key players and, you know, invest in new ones in a correct way, then you can bounce back pretty easily. We've seen that with Burnley last year and presumably with Leicester this season.
Leicester last season, though, I mean, doesn't that encapsulate the two seasons in one thing? Because they started abysmally, then had a very good run leading up to the World Cup and you thought, well, they'll be fine. And then I think they sort of maintained a little bit of form and then started playing again as if they were back at the beginning of the season. And, you know, maybe if that had been another full season, they would have rallied again. Who knows? But
and also, when you do sack a manager later in the season, the options you have to replace them. Like Leicester really struggled to find anyone to take over. You know, Leeds turned to Sam Allardyce. And, you know, we saw with Wolves sort of 10, 12 years ago, they sat Mick McCarthy and couldn't get anyone else to come in for the rest of the campaign. Whereas if you do it earlier in the season, a manager from abroad who's quite good might think, oh, I've got plenty of time to turn that around.
Yeah, let's take your sort of theory about that 10 games of Spurs as I guess a thought for where these teams are. So at this moment in time, we're looking at Luton, we're looking at Sheffield United, we're looking at Burnley. What success for any of those teams right now? I mean, Luton, did they expect to go down? It's a pretty early time to be making that call, yeah, right?
But it's a I mean, the Luton story is remarkable in itself. I mean, I think they're, it sounds dreadfully patronising, but the reality is they're probably still pinching themselves that they're in the Premier League. And actually, Rob Edwards is probably the man who gives them the best chance of staying in the division as well, because he knows how they those players play. He will play to their strengths, and you know they won't get hoodwinked into trying to change their style just to survive. You know, I think they're really realistic about how they look at things. I mean, Burnley's an interesting one just because they had such a radical change of style last year, which was brilliant for the Championship, but doesn't look as if it's going to be enough to keep them in the Premier League.
It looks naive, and Burnley have obviously spent a lot of money as well. And when they came to Brentford 2 weeks ago, I genuinely didn't know who half of those players were. They just seemed to be signing these random 20, 21, 22-year-olds from all over the place. And that's absolutely fine if you're dropping one or two of them into a team and trying to stay in a division. When you're trying to throw six, seven in all at once, like everybody knows that James Trafford is a keeper with a very high ceiling, but is it maybe too early for him to go in and be a starting goalkeeper for a Premier League team with a completely new back four? Out of the three teams, I agree with you. I think Rob Edwards will be absolutely fine. The moves Luton made in the summer, it looked very much as if they were investing wisely, knowing that we're going to get players who are maybe upper Championship, lower Premier League table. So if we do get relegated and come straight back down, we're probably going to retain the vast majority of those players. But Kompany, after the game, when they lost to Brentford, so this is even before what happened against Bournemouth, he was talking about how...
We always knew in this league we'd have to find a way. And that's still the mission at the moment. This, especially the first half performance, was nowhere near good enough. And then always when we get a little bit of momentum, we show that we're dangerous. So we got some massive chances today again. But you know, if we don't take our chances, then you've got to be solid. And you know, kind of on both sides of it, we didn't do enough.
Then he also kind of wheeled out the dreaded, I have a very strong feeling about these types of moments. They define you as a human being, not just in football, in life in general. You know, when you're at your highest high and you get success and everything's going for you, can you still be humble? Can you still work hard, etc.? And then when you're having a tough time, can you still be resilient and be together? And to me, that kind of sounds like he, you know, he's beating the drum, trying to get everybody to rally together. So if in 2 weeks' time he got sacked, it wouldn't surprise me at all. It'd be a shame because he's obviously showed some good things, but I just think they've been too naive in the way they've wanted to play. He's not been willing to compromise enough.
Yeah, and I think Burnley, as Don was saying, you know, they did play very well in the Championship. And obviously Kompany had played for much of his career at Manchester City. And you can see kind of why he did that. But if you look at metrics like direct speed, which kind of shows how fast you're progressing the ball up the pitch, the only teams that are similar to Burnley this season in the Premier League are Arsenal and Manchester City. Now, it feels like they can play that football. Doesn't feel like Burnley have kind of earned the right. I know that's a bit of a retro kind of thing, but you can't just come up to the Premier League and knock it around, because Premier League teams are good at football and they will find you out, and that's what's happened so far.
I asked someone in recruitment last night, you know, this question, and he flung it back at me. He said, in your opinion, which managers deserve to be under pressure based on what we've seen so far this season? And actually, if you go down the list, they're not that many, and certainly in that sort of middle of the road club status, I don't think there are many. I mean, I'm not surprised that Burnley, Sheffield United and Luton are where they are. Steve Cooper will be under pressure because of the ownership at Nottingham Forest.
They spent a lot of
money. Yeah, and actually, you know, you look at the most vulnerable managers in the division, it's probably always going to be Steve Cooper, unfortunately. But the others, I mean, you really have to go further up the table to Chelsea and Manchester United before you're thinking, well...
I think this is where football as a sport and how people understand the sport has really progressed over the last sort of decade, in the sense that, you know, I've seen a lot of people say, well, Bournemouth have had statistically the hardest start based on fixtures, which is true. So that's given Iraola a bit of a rigor room. And Everton maybe, you know, haven't been great at points, but the underlying numbers for Everton have been really good. So again, people have gone, well, actually, it probably will be better in a few weeks. And that looks like it's starting to happen.
Yeah, you don't look at their performance at West Ham and think, oh, they're a team that's going to be down there. The way that they're battling is good, and it's now they've got that defiance as well. It's us against the world with everything else happening. It would take a hefty points deduction before you look at Everton and think, oof, they're going to struggle again now.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Before you get back to this Athletic podcast, did you know it's just one of many made by The Athletic every week? I'm Abby Patterson, senior producer here at The Athletic, and I get to work across so many of our shows. But even I have my favourites. Sometimes you're just too busy for a full-length podcast. I get it. We've all been there. Well, we've got a show to help you. Get up to speed with all the football stories you need to know about with our daily football briefing.
It's done and dusted. Saudi Arabia will host the 2034 World Cup.
Got a bug for the women's game? Then Full-Time Europe is for you. It's our dedicated women's football podcast answering the questions you're asking from the WSL and Champions League.
Does the Women's Champions League need a shake-up?
But perhaps you want to know exactly how a team has set itself up. Then come to the audio whiteboard and join Michael Cox and our analytics gurus as they dissect and examine the game like nobody else can. That's on the Athletic Football Tactics podcast.
I don't think I've ever seen a striker who reads the game so well.
And the Athletic is so much more than just football or soccer. So if you're also into your American sports, there's shows providing unrivaled insight on the NFL, NBA, hockey and baseball too. Something for everyone. Just search The Athletic wherever you're listening to this podcast now, and you'll find your next podcast obsession in no time at all. Now, let's get back to your show.
We spoke about Steve Cooper, and I think he's quite an interesting one, having obviously spent a lot of money. How much can also be atoned to what he brings to that team, a steadiness?
It's about context, isn't it?
Do you know what I mean?
They needed to spend the money last year because they had no players, because they're all loanees. And this year has been part of a revolution. Look, it got utterly insane in the last week of the transfer window when they did what they did last year. But up to then, it had been quite sensible. But if you go to a Nottingham Forest match, the fan base could not be more behind a manager.
Yeah.
They're unbelievable with him. I mean, I went to the Palace Forest game recently and they serenade his name throughout. It's Steve Cooper's army. You know, that is his team. But it's not about that. It's about the relationship between Steve Cooper and the ownership.
It's also an incredible achievement to inherit that many players, because I'm sure Cooper wouldn't have wanted all of them last season and this season, and to actually make it work and to make it a cohesive unit. And even losing a player like Brennan Johnson, who I don't know if he was their top scorer last season. I think he might have been. They're still adapted to that pretty well. And obviously Alanga's looked completely rejuvenated. So as much as it's about Cooper receiving a lot of very talented players, there's no doubt about that. Like Sangare from PSV Eindhoven would have been linked with some of the top clubs in Europe before.
He went to Nottingham Forest.
You've still got to say that Cooper is a very good coach and very good at making players better that he inherits anyway. So he deserves a lot of credit for that too.
And then that brings me to the Brentford point. I guess a much more cohesive operation there, from the backroom staff to the players to the manager as well. And yeah, I mean, they might pick up quite a few bad results as the season goes on, but you feel there's a safety there, right?
Yeah.
Whoever takes that job.
I wasn't going to wax lyrical about Brentford.
But I know, I'm just opening the door for you, Jay. Come on.
I think, obviously, we spoke about Vincent Kompany maybe not adjusting his methods. And one thing Thomas Frank has spoken about loads was that when Brentford got promoted, they had a reputation for being one of the most attractive sides in the Championship. And he spoke about that summer, his main focus was on improving the defence. He knew that if Brentford had any chance of staying in the division, they needed to be rock solid at the back. So first of all, that gives you an insight into how he changed his approach. Not completely. And then in terms of developing talent, to be honest, in the last couple of years, it's actually been a little bit hit and miss. Some of the players they brought in, so Keane Lewis-Potter, for example, they signed him from £60 million from Hull. It's not quite worked out so far. He's had a lot of injuries. But someone like Kevin Schaarder, signed him for £22 million, signed him on loan originally, and then he moved in the summer permanently. He's already become a Germany international since they've signed him. And it's very much about identifying a very talented young player and giving him the platform to kick on. But Schaarder is one individual in a very experienced starting 11. If there were five Schaarders in the starting 11, for example, I don't think it would quite work. But I think Thomas Frank and Brentford are very clever in the way that They know when and how to use younger players. I hope that made sense in the end.
Yeah. I think there's actually a really interesting point there in the sense that the three teams that came up, they kind of knew they'd probably be in a battle this season. So it's not a big surprise to them. I think there's kind of what I'd call like Swansea City syndrome in the sense that they came up, played really good football. Everyone was like, ah, oh, Swansea are amazing. And then they, obviously Brendan Rodgers left. They got Michael Laudrup in, kind of continued. Gary Monk came in, sort of continued. But each manager that came in subsequently, it's the model kind of weakened a little bit. And I think for clubs like Brentford and Brighton, they're doing really well at the moment, but it's what happens in a year or two when, you know, presumably managers move on or players move on and it's replacing those players. They're the teams that it's quite easy to get lulled into a full sense of security. You're up in the Premier League, you're now a Premier League club. And that's when it can be, I think, quite dangerous. And I think that's probably what this season's really good for those clubs, because they have got this little kind of boost of the bottom three coming in and not being great.
I'm just thinking how much is it about fundamentally just staying in the Premier League if you can, or having a plan whereby you pick up your check, go back down, invest again, and then come back up? You know, because we're talking billions here. We're talking TV rights, 5 billion this season, and previous seasons, 3 billion. I mean, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, and again, it's the context is different with each club. Mm. Burnley slightly doing, because they did spend an awful lot of the summer. But the three that come up generally, you think, well, A, they anticipate this being a struggle, and if they go down, then they might be in a better position to respond. And that isn't too damaging. They'll have the parachute payment next year. And, you know, the Championship isn't maybe the same kind of division as it was a few years back. But then if you're one of the established teams, God, it seems bizarre to say that, but say you're certainly an Everton, I think going down would be disastrous. If you're Crystal Palace, actually Palace will have been in the division for 11 years come next summer. They're very clever with their budgets and they probably don't overspend. They don't spend any money in the transfer market, really. But I think going down would have a cataclysmic almost effect on that club. As in any of those mid-table clubs, you have to look at like a Stoke or a Sunderland to see what happens. If you've been in the division for a long time, you're used to paying big money relatively to players. You've got a commitment to that, then you get relegated and you suddenly lose the vast majority of those revenues, and you are in serious trouble. So that will shape how they treat their management. But again, those are the guys that are looking at it thinking, this is probably going to be the easiest year to stay in the division.
I was at Charlton earlier this season, and it was it's funny just to see how much the mid-2000s is still plastered across the valley. You know, there's just pictures of, and that was the peak. And I remember at the time when Charlton fans were a little bit like, oh, I'm not sure Kerbyshire's got enough to take us to the next level. We need to win the UEFA Cup. And it's kind of careful what you wish for, because, yeah, it can go wrong quite quickly.
Yeah, for sure. What do we make of, and I'll be interested on the stats on this, the sort of new manager bounce. You know, Sean Dyche, I remember last season coming in, they beat Arsenal, right? And everyone was like, oh, here we go. And not really hit much higher, really. Obviously, Everton stayed in the Premier League when they were looking at relegation, but does that often equal success?
In a lot of those situations, some players are probably just so relieved the manager's left that of course there's going to be an uplifting mood. So forgive me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty certain Frank Lampard had kind of excluded Abdoulaye Doucouré from Everton's squads. Like, it wasn't really a feature. And now you look at Doucouré, I think he scored some very, very crucial goals in those final few weeks of the season to basically help Everton stay up. He's one of the first names on the team sheets. So sometimes it's not so much that bounce back ability, but just that kind of weight that's been lifted from players' shoulders that a manager they didn't get on particularly well with, or a style they didn't like, has kind of been removed. But hiring and firing managers constantly is only going to get you so far. It's about having a long-term strategic plan in place, which might sound boring to people that just love the chaos and love the idea that a new manager is going to come in on a white horse and instantly solve everything. But actually,
I mean, if he came in on a white horse, that would be quite cool.
Yeah.
Sean Dyche on a white horse. Yeah. I see that. El Dyche himself.
Yeah, yeah.
It's way more from the top to the bottom in that regard.
Yeah, our colleague John Muller did a piece at the end of last season looking at this and kind of points out that it is the variance that you want. When a new manager comes in, it's almost at the point where the club's hit that point where they need something to change. And I think he had a line saying, The club could have simply had a press conference to announce a vibe shift. And it's kind of true. It's like that's often what it is, you know, and you will get a win or a couple of wins in the first few weeks of the new manager. But then generally, statistically, it does settle back down to where they were.
You always get the classic, you know, the new manager's coming, he's banned ketchup, he's banned mayonnaise, you know, training's fun again. You always get
or allowed ketchup for the previous manager and banned it.
But we're usually the same set of players. And this is my big one, right? Is it down to the manager? Because look, how many times have we seen players step up for one manager and not for another?
I'm going to spend this entire podcast talking about Palace. But, like 17 games last season, things weren't working under Vieira. And then the fixtures were easier at the end, but the place just needed a fresh...
new vibe.
And I'm using Roy Hodgson as that.
The Roy Hodgson vibe.
It was about organisation. It was about... maybe making the training sessions slightly different. And I think footballers are affected by things like that. Just if they lose faith in what a manager is doing day to day, as in the training techniques, team selection, the tactics, whatever, if they lose faith, it's very difficult for that manager to turn things around, generally speaking.
Obviously, in the 90s, when there were much fewer managers getting sacked, two of the first four Premier League seasons, only one manager left during the season in two seasons. But then you also had a transfer window that was open until the end of March. And I think back then it was often easier to change a player than it was to change a manager.
And there wasn't this, oh my God, if we get relegated, we'll collapse financially. That didn't happen back then. I mean, you could go into the Championship and actually think, well, this might be quite nice. We might win some games now. And it's not a major problem.
Swindon Town didn't, but I take your point.
Well, yeah. There were always exceptions.
And I want to bring you back to Palace, but For a team like Palace, and Roy Hodgson is a good manager, we've seen what he can do. What is the future for a team like Palace? Because Roy Hodgson isn't getting any younger. Palace might want to move on from 13th in the table or wherever.
Well, they might do, but...
Or is that where they're happy?
Well, again, that's a really good philosophical question to put to Palace's ownership. And that's something that I've brought up in previous podcasts. I mean, the ambition at that club and what they actually want to do. What is the point of Crystal Palace in the Premier League? I mean, actually, the current ownership would say, well, we stay in the division for another few years. We can get the 110 million or whatever it's going to cost now, main stand rebuilt. And actually, Palace then do move into a different level in terms of what they generate on a match day, et cetera, et cetera. And that probably allows them to kick on. But to do that, they need to be in the Premier League. So what gives you the best chance of being in the Premier League? Well, last season probably proved that it's Roy Hodgson.
It's quite interesting they reappointed him, because I think clubs have now realised that manager succession is quite hard. You know, you just have to look at even teams like Manchester United. You know, it's not easy. It's not a case of just hiring someone else and it's going to be fine. And that culture is so embedded into clubs now.
But it's so weird, isn't it? Because we're now in a situation where the vast majority of clubs have directors of football who should be able to sort a succession plan. They should be able to implement a playing style across all their teams within those clubs. So this is what we do. And now we just need to find a head coach who can come in and play football like that. And actually, so many don't. So many are still dysfunctional.
And who's top of the table? The team that have changed their style most radically this season. So, yeah.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirectTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You're listening to The Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwolere.
What about this idea of sticking, and we've touched on it here, sticking with the manager? Is that fans? You know, and their impatience with fans and clubs are so quick to pull the trigger, because it has been shown that, I don't know what the stats are particularly, maybe you can help me out on this, Duncan, on staying with managers and then at some point it does turn around.
I mean, last season, obviously, David Moyes and Steve Cooper were under pressure at various points during the season and they got stuck with and both kept their teams up. So, yeah, I mean, there's other examples. Obviously, Nigel Pearson turned it around with Leicester, you know, very well that season. They stayed up and then they did quite well the following season, I believe. But yeah, I mean, it's easy now, I think, for fans to get onto, het up and onto a little bandwagon of like a change will make a difference. But I think, to the point we made a few minutes ago, that I do think fans are becoming a little bit cleverer in understanding that it isn't just a case of a quick change. I think you can tell when a change is needed, when you know the fabled he's lost the dressing room, that sort of thing. You can tell when it's at that point. Maybe, but often managers are doing okay, just the results aren't there.
But what about the upturn thing? You're talking about managers, presumably, that change in February or March or April. But what happens, what about in the build-up to a transfer window? Emery and Lopetegui last season came in before the transfer window opened and therefore, in theory, could bring players in January to suit what they wanted to do. I just wonder, is it the same thing? I mean, I would have thought if there's going to be, well, that's why we're into this area now. It's we're not thinking necessarily we're going to sack the manager because we're going down. But a lot of clubs will be looking at it and thinking we're going to sack the manager because in January we'll have a chance to change the squad a bit, potentially, possibly, if we've got any money. And we want a manager in place who's going to be able to work with those players?
I think if you use examples, both Wolves and Villa last season were good teams or good squads that were underperforming. I think that's probably the moment when a new manager will make a difference. The flip side to that is when a team's unlucky, and you can see that now in underlying numbers and go, well, actually, if we just give the manager some more time, it probably will come good.
Real talk. Who do you reckon might be the first for the chop? We've already said Steve Cooper's out of it.
He's out of it?
Yeah, no, we've already said him. Another one.
I wouldn't suggest that Paul Heckingbottom's on particularly safe ground, and that's in spite of Sheffield United's expectations and all the trouble last summer. Again, I think it comes down to the relationship between manager and owner in that case, rather than, you know, the aspirations and ambitions of the football club. But I mean, if there's a difference there, then there's a problem.
I think if you've got bottom in your surname, it's a worry. I mean, probably relegation zone would be worse, but only slightly.
You've been saving that one, I can see it.
I mean, the other end of the table, you know, if Manchester United, there are clubs where who've got a history of making decisions where you didn't expect them to. So, I mean, we could be in for a season where there are some unexpected changes. But like Don was saying, it feels at the moment, other than maybe Forest, maybe Sheffield United, that everyone's kind of set for the next few months.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's difficult to kind of tell with Burnley, because company does have a lot of credit in the bank for what he did in the Championship last season. But I just remember sitting in those press conferences and the comments he made just made me think this is really not going in the direction that he expected it to. And it just made me worry for him a little bit. And then with Man United, I think had Man United lost to Brentford just before the international break, then I think that that 2-week international break period would have been, I'm not saying he would have gone, but the pressure would have only amounted even more. And then if they'd gone on to lose to City in the derby, which they did, you could have imagined them maybe making a decision there. But I guess it also depends at United what happens with Sir Jim Ratcliffe and when that kind of goes through.
If you're an underachieving club, though, apart from Lopetegui, who would you appoint? Who would you go for?
at the moment. I don't think there are that many candidates out there. You can't go down that. You know, we're beyond the sort of Poulis Allardyce era now, aren't we?
Yeah, I think that era has finally.
Last season with Allardyce.
Finally passed, yeah. I come in and win games. Not always. Yeah, you're right. I think, and again, I think last season there were managers available. And I think that's another factor is that who's out there looking for a job does that, you know, that will make clubs look sit up and take notice.
Dom, Duncan, Jay, thanks so much for your time. And please remember to rate and review the podcast if you're enjoying it. And do not forget to sign up to The Athletic today for a special limited time offer of just $1.99 a month for 12 months at theathletic.com/footballpod. Thank you so much for listening. We're back tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Athletic Football Podcast. The producers were Adonis Pratsides and Guy Clark, with additional production by Mike Stavro and Jay Beale. The executive producer was AD Moorhead.
The Athletic.